The cycling podcast at the 2024 Tour de France Femmes is supported by MAP. Today, we're in Morteau.
And what was going through your mind when you saw Niamh Fisher-Black go? And
oh no, no, don't go! And then on the last meters, I thought I would catch her, but then she do another sprint and I was like, why? But yeah, okay, I have the jersey, so I'm happy.
Well, we heard at the top there, Justine Heerkere giving us a little account of her own personal battle to stay on the wheel of Niamh Fisher-Black, to try and get the polka dot jersey. I mean, she's such a great rider to talk to, Justine, and so enthusiastic and so engaging. I thought we had to pop her right at the top of the show. But we will talk a little bit later. There's been a few jerseys that's moved around here at the Tour de France on stage six. Tour de France fam, in case you hadn't realised, stage six. But yeah, a few jerseys have moved around, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But Denny Gray, we're here in a lovely, it's a square, but I actually don't think it's normally a square here in Morteau, is it? There's a few roads that actually cut it, but it's all been closed off and we're sitting on a picnic table and very jolly, isn't it?
It's very nice. I think it's a Carfax, I think that's what they call it, Rose.
Oh, I don't know what
it's
that
like,
is.
It's like where you got like an L-shaped or an H-shaped road with several turnings off around the square.
Oh, I'm learning new things
anyway,
as you're
talking.
Anyway,
I've got one in Horsham in West Sussex. That's the only reason I know about Carfaxes. But anyway, let's get back to France. We're here. Yeah, there's a festival going on here, isn't there, in this beautiful little town very close to the Swiss border. Of course, we're in Franche-Comté, which is
you're gonna
the region of
that.
My favourite cheese. But we didn't... Well, we haven't tasted any of the delicious Comté quite yet.
We'll come on to that, but I do want to... I mean, it's taken us 1 minute 30 to talk about cheese, and we did get Lionel got an email from a friend of the podcast, Jim, who did say that, you know, can we treat them to a podcast that is suitable for those who are lactose intolerant and therefore fail to appreciate start-to-finish obsessional cheese references. And I was thinking, oh, Jim, come on, we don't talk about cheese that much. But 1 minute 30, that's a record,
I think,
Debbie.
Jim's got a point, hasn't he? They'll have to think of a different food topic for
Jim,
future tours.
Jim, you're going to hate the feature later on because that is, yes, yet more cheese. But there is racing, of course, that we should probably talk about, shouldn't we, amongst
that's
all
why
the
we're
obsessional
here.
Cheese references. And, yes, stage six, as I said... Do you want to give us, Denny, your tale of the etap? And just to be clear, a tale of the etap of what the racing was, because yesterday when we were teeing up the preview at the end of the show, weren't we, you got a little confused and started telling us about our road trip that we'd be taking. And
well, going back onto the cheese front. Sorry, Jim. Anyway, it feels like a lot happened, but nothing happened today in many ways. But stage six took us from Remiremont to Morteau, taking in 159.2 kilometres. We had 2,200 metres of climbing and five categorised climbs. Belgian rider that we just heard from, Justine Heerkere, from the AG Insurance Soudal team, showed her intent right at the beginning of the stage as she led the bunch over the top of the first climb of the day. And then a breakaway of 14 riders established itself, and that included Justine Heerkere, but also Audrey Cordon-Ragot, Fen Van Empel, Franziska Kok, Christine Margeris, Marianne of Oss, Niamh Fisher-Black, Soraya Paladin and Grace Brown bridged across to them to bolster the escape. So there was a large group that went away, and Heerkere and Voss were less than 2 minutes down on GC, and at one point Heerkere was actually in virtual yellow. That didn't last for her, but she did make the most of it. She bagged a lot of polka dot points along the way, while Voss staked her claim for green by winning the intermediate sprint. Niamh Fisher-Black up the pace on the penultimate climb of the day with Brown and Heerkere, the only riders initially able to stay in touch. However, they were caught on the final climb, the Côte des Fans. That climb saw attacks from Juliette Labousse from DSM Firmenich PostNL and Paulina Royakkers from Fenix de Koenig. They went ultimately nowhere, but when Puck Peterser pushed the pace to grab the points atop the climb, only Cassia Nieuwiedoma and Amy Vollering could stay on a wheel. They eased up, though, allowing a reduced bunch of around 20 riders to catch up, and Cedrine Kerbol from the Serra Tizzet WNT team took advantage of that lull, launching an attack Roy Akers jumping on her wheel. A daring descender, Cabal dropped Roy Akers on the descent. The latter swept up by the chasing group, and Cabal didn't look back, flying over the final kilometres to the finish line to the delight of the home fans, taking the first French win at the Tour since Jeannie Longo in 1989.
Oh, we're counting those tours.
Well, if we're going back in hit time,
you better get your Casio Nivea Doma back out then, Denny, because I was going to ask you all time how many, what percentage
Crikey,
we had of
all time.
French
well,
wins.
In the modern day Tour de France, fam. The French have won one stage, 4.5% of stages.
Gosh.
Which is pretty minor. But the Dutch have won 60% still, which leaves the rest of the world at... Dutch have won 59%, actually, to give the correct figure.
That would help.
Yes. And the rest of the world are on 41%. So the rest of the world... Come on, pull your socks up.
This is good. It sounds like the start of a spin-off where we have... I guess that's what the Olympics is for, isn't it? The Dutch versus the rest of the world. That's kind of what the Olympics is for. It's like how I just suddenly had a brainwave and I came up with the concept of the Olympics.
Yeah, it's a bit like those charity football matches where they have England versus the rest of the world or
Ryder Cup or something like
that.
Yeah,
maybe basically. We should have a race across France which involves a select Dutch team against a rest of the world team, see how they get on. I think that's quite a good concept, actually, Rose.
It is. Oh, right. Right. Well, this is going to end the podcast. We're going to go and start ringing around.
Get on the phone
to Velon. Yeah. We got a great, as good as any other Velon idea, I'm sure. But yes, let's.
We should just say that where that leaves everyone.
Oh, sorry, Jerry.
That basically leaves Nivea Doma still in yellow, but she's 16 seconds ahead of Cabal, with Faulkner a further 3 seconds back on GC. Voss's exploits meant that she has taken over the green jersey, 25 points ahead of Charlotte Kuhl, and Kerkira has taken the polka dot jersey from Pieterse. So we'll see Pieterse in white instead tomorrow.
Well, let's just talk a little bit more about this great French win for Cedrine Cabal. Obviously, she rides for Sarah Tizzit, a win for Sarah Tizzit. It was a huge moment for her. She's not obviously, we know how capable she is. She won the white jersey last year, but I don't think people were kind of circling her name at the beginning of the day, were they?
No, I mean, she had quite a good stage yesterday. She moved herself up on GC after finishing in that, not quite in the top group, but she was up there. So she'd already made some ground yesterday, but it was a beautifully timed attack, wasn't it? There was that lull in the front group just as the favourites kind of eased up, and she launched that attack, and it's worked so well for so many riders in the past. But what I loved about the attack was just the fact that she fully committed to it. There was no looking back. She gunned it down that descent. It was a bit like her win at Durango back in Spain earlier
this
year.
So good they named it twice.
Yes. In the pouring rain this time. Of course, we're in the blazing sun this time around. But a fantastic, fantastic win. And although we may look at the lack of coordination in the chase group as one of the reasons why she made it to the finish, I don't think we can take anything away from Cedrine Cabal. Of course, she's such a great time trialist, and she just motored away to the finish there, didn't she?
Yeah, former French national time trial champion. Let's hear from Dirk Baldinger, shall we? He's the DS at Ceratizit, her team.
She know the finish here, so she know well the downhill and the finish. Okay, let's stay attack on the top of the last climb if the group is all together, yeah? And it worked out like perfect. What we mentioned in the meeting this morning, and first you need to have the legs also to push the last 5Ks, yeah. But she arrived on the bottom with 30 seconds, and she arrived with 20 more or less in the finish. And the good thing is how she can this do, yeah. She is a TT rider, she can hold the position, head down, and push. And behind was Alice, a teammate from us or from her, yeah. And she disturbed a little bit the group. Yeah, to the others to get some seconds, and it worked out everything for us.
And how was she being motivated from the team car when she was
on her own out the front there.
We were screaming and telling her the time always. full gas, yeah, you get it. Yeah. And in the end, you saw it, and by 500 meters, it was clear that she can win, yeah.
Obviously, this race is extremely special to her as a French woman, also as a white jersey winner. I mean, how amazing and remarkable is it that she can perform at the biggest races that she needs?
But it's also, she's really focused, she's hard working on herself every year, yeah. So also last year, okay, it was maybe a new startup, but she popped up as a star, as a young French star. But she had not a big head also, so she was calming down. We did our job last year to survive in the white jersey, yeah, and already this year, in the beginning of the year, she showed with some victories, yeah. Well, we know, okay, Durango, she won some smaller races in Valencia, yeah, and we tried it also in Liège there, but it not worked out a little bit, but here to the Tour, she was really well prepared, she was focused on this, and of course, when you are racing in France, in your home country, is more motivating for her. And I think this stage, she was looking at it, yeah, because she's not a pure climber, some TT. And like a stage like this, it fits super well to her.
I did ask Dirk after this, what can we expect from Cedrine going forward, you know, for the rest of the race? You know, is there a possible GC champion? Is she a possible GC champion? Because she obviously is only second on GC. She's only 16 seconds behind Kasia Nieuwiedoma. And of course, she was the white jersey winner last year, the youth jersey. She won the youth jersey classification last year when they went up the Tourmalet. It's not like they weren't doing big climbs last year. And he kind of dismissed it. He kind of said, well, she's not really that kind of rider. She's not really a GC rider. She's not really, you know, she'll give it a go in the high mountains, but we're not really expecting anything. She came 12th last year, and he said they were, you know, she would be really thrilled with a top 10 finish. But what do you think, Denny? Do you think she could be a bit capable of a bit more, maybe?
I mean, she's a great time trialist, as we've just said, and time trialists can often be fairly good on those kind of longer climbs that require that longer effort that you might use in a time trial. But yeah, her record doesn't suggest she'll be competing with the very best. And you mentioned last year she came 12th overall on the Tourmalet stage, which I guess is the most similar to the final stage this time around. She finished 14th, so she wasn't among the main contenders there. I think, you know, well, I'm sure her DS knows her better than I do, but I would expect her to, you know, I guess there's a clutch of riders, isn't there? Not just Cedrine Cabal, but or Cabal.
Kerbol.
But Christine Faulkner, and a few others that are up there on GC that probably will be approaching tomorrow thinking, let's see how it goes, see how long I can hang in there. But they're not really expected to be among the contenders for the final GC.
Yeah, lots of riders who are likely to be kind of following the wheels, aren't they? Like, you know, you say Talita de Jong, Liana Lipper is in the top 10. Also, they're like, you know, they're not known for being these kind of high mountain climbers, and they're going to want to see how far they can go and see, you know, what they can do. I mean, Kerbol on the Tourmalet, she did beat a few kind of major riders actually up the Tourmalet. She beat Erica Magnaldi, Rihanna Marcus, Sylvia Persico, Mavi Garcia. She beat all of those riders last year. Obviously, she didn't, you know, beat the likes of Labuse and Nieuwiedoma. And Vollering, who were kind of all, you know, those are who we're kind of looking at, aren't we, as the big GC contenders. But she might be capable of something. Now, Denny, how many, this is just a little side note, how many Instagram posts do you think Cedrine Cabal put on her Instagram between the time of her finishing the race today and us leaving the press room? Posts.
Right. Well, I'm assuming this is going to be a high number, given the fact that you posed the question.
Imagine if I just said no.
Let's go for 15.
Oh, 14.
Wow.
Very good, though. Gosh, you know your Cedrine Cabal's social media
well,
very well.
When I saw her on the finish line, she was just sitting there exhausted talking to...
Was she just on her phone?
The world. She wasn't on her
phone.
No, she was talking to the world's media, but... Yeah, she obviously got to work not long after that.
Well, obviously, you know, we were talking to her about, you know, talking about her, about whether she's a GC contender or not. I mean, on paper, she isn't. So kind of today was in the end a bit of a win for the opportunists, the kind of riders who come into this race and they want to take a stage. They don't necessarily want to perform in the jerseys or on the GC. And obviously that, all of the moves that we had today, the main move that went was kind of started by Audrey Cordon-Rigaud, who is exactly that kind of opportunist kind of rider, and who knows Cedrine Cabal as a neighbour. I mean, Brittany is a big region, so she's probably not her neighbour, but, you know, she knows her a bit. So let's hear from Audrey Cordon-Rigaud.
Is it a difficult race because there's not many opportunities for people who aren't going for GC or going for a sprint?
Yeah, actually, it's not long enough to have more opportunities. So every day is kind of an opportunity for the GC riders to try something. Today I was quite kind of happy that we could go away, but still in the front we had some riders dangerous for GC, so we never get so much time. And I was not the strongest at the front, so I knew it was. It would be hard to make it, but I'm still happy that I tried.
Is it frustrating that when you see that GC riders are still, you know, want to get something from a stage when it's like the only chance really to get something from it?
Yeah. I mean, it's frustrating, but at the same time, it's normal. Like, I understand them. Like, everyone wants to make the best of every day. And again, if the tour was 2 weeks, maybe we had more opportunities, but it's not the case. So they try hard and... and I'm not a GC rider, so yeah, for sure, for me, it's frustrating.
And what does it mean to get there to be a French win? Obviously, Cedrine is not your teammate, but a win for France, nevertheless.
Yeah, she's my teammate in the national team, so for me, it's kind of the same. And she's from Bretagne, like me, so yeah, it's a super good, nice win for her, and she deserves it. And I know she was super disappointed not being at the Olympics, and I found it really, really strong from her to refocus on tour and come here and being so strong. It's really amazing.
Do you know her well at all? Or how well do you know Cedrine?
Sorry?
How well do you know Cedrine?
Oh, well, I know her since she's really young, actually. I remember like giving her a trophy, one of my Wiggle jersey on the podium when she was, I think, under 15. So, yeah, I know her since quite long. And, I've been on the podium of the World Championships last year with her on the team relay. So, yeah, we know each other quite good.
Is it a win for France or a win for Brittany?
I think if you ask her, she would say it's a win for Brittany and then for France. But I think anyway, it's the same.
Well, you're going to have to readjust your figures now, Denny, aren't you? Because, you know, today's win wasn't a win for France. It was actually a win for Brittany first. So then, and then France.
Well, what percentage was Brittany and what percentage was France? That's the question you should have asked Audrey Cordon.
I know. I need to. There's obviously a classification that I'm not aware of. But so nice to hear that little insight from Audrey Cordon-Rigaud, and also, you know, mentioning that Cedrine Cabal didn't get picked for the Olympics. They took Juliette Labousse and Audrey Cordon-Rigaud and Victoire Berthaud instead to the Olympics. So it was kind of. She clearly had this in her sights and then she executed it perfectly. But yes, it was a funny old stage in general, wasn't it? Because we were thinking that it would be a breakaway stage and then it kind of became, you know, when you see who was up there in those closing kilometres, it became a GC stage.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't. I mean...
Wasn't it?
Is that
it?
Better? Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a GC stage. We did see some moves from the GC riders late on, of course, on that final climb, the Côte des Fans. Juliette Labousse really tried hard. She lives not far from here, of course, so knows the circuit well. Pauline Royacker's put in a dig. And there was a brief moment, as I said in the tail of the attack, where Puk Pieterse, Cassia Nieuwedoma and Amy Vollering did have a gap over the group behind, but none of them wanted to take it on and they were soon back in the group. So I guess potentially that, you know, if they decided to push on, that could have changed things. But I guess they all cancelled each other out in the end. Why would they want to work and cooperate with each other at that point? But there were some other curious tactics going on, weren't there? Mm-hmm. Both in the chase at the finale there, but also throughout the stage.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you know, it's funny to when you get in a situation where you do have, you know, Vollering, well, Puck Peterson, because she is so high up on GC right now, and Cassie Nieva-Doma right at the front, you're expecting there to be a little bit more team support for those riders, because it, you know, kind of means that this stage is actually pretty critical. And if one of those GC contenders goes off and gets a bit of a gap, then that's losing a lot of time. So, I mean, but we didn't really see Canyon SRAM controlling it in the way that you might think, particularly considering that when Cedrine Kerbau went off, she was actually very close to taking the yellow jersey out on the road.
That's right, yeah. And we wanted to find out a bit more about Canyon SRAM's approach, really, to managing at the stage, first time in yellow for Cassie Nieva-Doma. So I spoke with Adam Sabo, the DS at Canyon SRAM, to find out about their approach to taking on today.
We are not really used to riding in a yellow jersey in the races, and this is actually my first season with the Vertour team. So it was, I would say, we need to improve bits, but most important that we kept the jersey.
And how nervous were you feeling when Cedrine Kerbau was nearly there in virtual yellow?
Yeah, it was pretty nervous because, you know, like in the group behind, it was Grace Brown working, who is a good time trialist. And also, I mean, we need to keep rotating with Neve, but obviously TT on a flat flat terrain, like here it was after the climb, it's not her ideal terrain, so we just need to make sure that she doesn't get more and more seconds. At the end it turns out pretty tight, but it was still on the good side.
You said earlier, I'm interested to know, you said it's kind of a learning process for you as well. I mean what's that like, kind of learning on the kind of biggest stage with your rider in yellow?
I think if it's fair to say that I kind of like grown into my role. So I was coming from as a sport director, later on team manager of the development team with Canyon SRAM, from Canyon SRAM generation. And over the years here in this setup, practically I learned a lot from my colleagues and from the management as well. And I was DSing already a few races this year, so with the racing team it's already not a new experience, but to be in a tour is my first tour ever. So it's a steep one, but at the end it's just a race. It's just a little bit more media attention, of course, and it's a little bit more people around, but at the end it's just a race.
Is there a lot of pressure? Are you feeling a pressure?
Not really, but definitely it's a different thing when you arrive to a start and you have 20, 30 people standing around the bus, and it's different.
Yeah, so we heard from Adam Sabo there. I was amazed to find out that this is his first year in the World Tour. He hasn't been at the Tour before.
Crazy.
He's suddenly managing 20 to 30 riders.
And the yellow jersey.
And now has to manage the yellow jersey. You know, thrown at the deep end. And as he said, you know, it's kind of a learning curve for him, as well as Cassie Nieva-Doma and the rest of the team. And he said after the bit you have just heard that their strategy really was to try and be present at the front and ensure there wasn't chaos, and to manage the time gap. But it does feel that they are a little bit underpowered, doesn't it? And but anyway, we'll come on to how they might manage that in the future stages a bit later.
But they were actually really lucky, weren't they, that because Cedrine Kerbau was only 47 seconds back on the yellow jersey going into today. And then she had almost 40 seconds for a lot of the time that she was out solo. Even in the last kilometre, she had 33 seconds. And then if you think about a 10-second bonus for winning on the line, then that's cutting it pretty fine, isn't it? For the yellow jersey, of all things.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there was a time when it looked like Kerbau might get yellow as well as the stage win. And Canyon SRAM, of course, weren't helped by the fact that they only had one rider to help Nieva-Doma, Neve Bradbury. And as Adam Sabo told me, they've got to manage Neve Bradbury because she's going to be important in the mountains and on stage 7 and 8. So, and we only really saw FDJ Suez adding to the chase. It was a very curious scenario, given the fact that there was a stage win up for grabs for a number of teams here.
Yeah, so FTJ were really going for it. I mean, they had a huge amount of firepower. And I did actually speak to Grace Brown at the finish line, who was one of the members, FTJ teammates in that group, about kind of what exactly they were going for there. Because Avita Muzik is obviously up there on GC, but certainly not right in contention as it stands. So she said to me that they were trying to ride for a win for Avita Muzik, like a stage win for Avita Muzik, which seems so odd when you're in a group with the likes of Marianne Vos, and you're also in a group with the yellow jersey, whose yellow jersey is on the line. You know, you'd think you'd want to make them do the work instead of, you know, burning out all of your riders today when really the mountains are tomorrow and Sunday.
Yeah, it was very curious because you wouldn't expect Avita Muzik to be up there in a sprint finale. And indeed, she wasn't. She finished ninth on the stage and got beaten. So obviously got beaten by eight other riders, many of whom are on paper a lot better finishers than her, like Marianne Vos, of course, who came second, Liana Lippert third, Lucinda Brown and so on. So it was a curious decision. I think Marianne Vos played an absolute blinder today because she put in a real shift to get back into that chasing group over the top of that final climb. I think she's probably almost certainly sealed the green jersey because with not only did she win the intermediate sprint, she's now finished second today.
And Charlotte Cool is in second and is not looking good at all. She was way back straight away again today.
But that also changed the dynamic of the chasing group because although there were other teams with more than one rider in there, like Lidl Trek, for example, why would you want to bring Marianne Vos to the finish? Because you're not likely to beat her in that kind of finale, are you, against the type of riders that were there?
I remember Lizzie Banks always said that, like when she was racing, that, you know, if you looked around and in your group was Marianne Vos, it was like, you're a fool if you do any work because all you're doing is towing a shark to the line, basically. But yeah, I mean, Canyon SRAM can be very thankful that FTJ were there for whatever reason, and Cassia is still in yellow.
Yeah, I mean, I think they seemed... Cassia in the press conference said that she felt because FTJ were chasing and they had Neve, that the gap would kind of reduce towards the end because there would be people like Vos and others who would kind of increase the pace, and so they were kind of relying on that to some extent.
Which is a bit dangerous though, isn't it?
It was a bit dangerous, but then again, well, we've just discussed Kerbol's chances on GC. Would it have been a really bad thing for Canyon SRAM to lose the yellow jersey by a few seconds today? It might not have been, because that might have removed the pressure from them tomorrow and they could have enjoyed a different type of stage. So I don't know, maybe in hindsight, maybe they, I don't know, you know, it might have worked for them to their advantage.
It's a strange use of the word enjoy, Denny Gray, but we'll take it.
The cycling podcast at the 2024 Tour de France Femmes is supported by MAP.
Well, it's time to cover your ears, Jim, and the lactose intolerant community, because it is indeed time for our big cheese feature. We begin on another cheese adventure, Denny, here in Remiremont. We won't have any trouble finding cheese here. We are properly in France, aren't we, in the Vosges? And I know that we're in France because I've just seen a little girl applauding some cyclists passing her, applauding using two baguettes. So we're definitely in France.
Wow, I missed that. That would have been a sight to see. But it's a beautiful little town here, isn't it? As we drove in, there was this really striking church that was kind of, the backdrop was the beautiful Vosges mountains, beautiful market square we're in here. It's probably the most picturesque place we've been in. And the air is particularly clear and fresh, isn't it?
Oh, is that, you're getting a sense of that? I just like all the lovely pastel buildings everywhere with the little wooden shutters and beautiful flowers everywhere. Yes, it's very nice, but this is where, I think we're heading to this market, are we, Denny, here, to find the cheese?
Yeah, there should be a little fromagerie in this Les Halles Le Volontaire.
Beautifully pronounced. So beautiful. Should we go in and have a look? I don't, what are we looking for, Denny? Do we know, actually, around here?
Well, Comté is made at the other end of the stage, so I think we need to go for a local cheese. I believe Munster is a local speciality. Another washed Rhine cheese. Another one with pungent aroma, apparently. A bit like
great.
Your Hervé.
Well, I have just read, actually, that I shouldn't have been eating all these washed Rhine cheeses in my current condition, so I will have to pass if we do have one of those. And here we are. There's a huge stack. I mean, we had Comté when we come in. There's a huge just shelf of Comté. There's goat's cheese. There's, this looks like the local stuff here.
Yeah.
There we go.
I mean,
there's the one you wanted.
It's a beautiful array of cheese here, isn't it? It has me salivating, I have to say. Despite 5 days of cheese, I'm ready for more. But let's see if we can try some. Bonjour. Can we try some Munster?
Munster?
Oui. Can we...
Vous
voulez goûter? Oui. Merci.
Voilà.
Okay. Merci beaucoup. So this is, as I said, a washed Rhine cheese. It's kind of got this orangey-yellow rind to it. And, yes, definitely has a very pungent aroma. Rose, this is made from raw cow's milk, so unfortunately you can't have it, but do you want to have a smell?
Okay.
You probably don't need to get that close to it.
I did not need to go so close, okay. You're right.
I'm really enjoying this one. This could be the best yet. It is very, very pungent, but I'd say a bit more refined in taste than the Hervé. And apparently it goes well with kind of hearty breads, potatoes, and often served with cumin seeds. There is a cumin seed one there that we can see.
You didn't want to try the cumin one,
well,
Denny.
I just wanted to go for the original variety.
I think have a try of both, and then we'll see which one you like.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm thankful for being pregnant now, because that it really stinks. Mm. It really smells
one of those
so
ones?
Bad.
Oh, thank you.
I know, it's going to be on your
smell. I've just
been
given a serviette to wipe my mouth and hands, otherwise my hands will be stinking in the car. Can I also try the Munster with cumin?
Cumin,
oui, merci. Merci beaucoup. So, probably
here you go, Denny.
Similar. You can see the cumin seeds there. That gives it a really different flavour.
Is it the flavour cumin?
Funnily enough, it is, but it really kind of it offsets the pungency, actually. I mean, if you like cumin as a flavour, it comes out quite strongly, so it offsets the very pungent, creamy taste. I'm going to buy some. There's probably rather a lot there, Rose. Hopefully we're
I know,
not.
You've actually gone for a huge chunk.
But I did lose the other cheese in a fridge in a hotel, so this is stocking me up again. Okay, merci beaucoup. Par carte, s'il vous plaît. Merci. Well, hopefully you're okay with me buying this amount, Rose, because it's going to stink.
Because it does sting, and it stinks now. Yeah. I mean, it's not very much, but it stinks. You know, obviously you like your strong cheeses, but I think I've kind of dodged a bullet there, because I have just looked up Munster, because I hadn't heard of it before, and the first result just came up. It just said stinky French cheese. That's all it said. Which, you know, if only you could give tasting notes as beautifully eloquent as that.
Well, I think that probably sums it up, doesn't it? If you don't like stinky cheese, you won't like Munster. But if you like your strong flavours, this is probably one for you.
OK, let's go and get those baguettes, shall we? Well, we're very happily sitting here in Comté country, aren't we? But we actually haven't even had much cheese today. I don't want to talk about cheese too much, but I mean, what did we have? We had a dry baguette for lunch. We were starving, weren't we? It was such a long transfer today. 2.5 hours, wasn't it, from the start to the finish in the car, just eating morsels of dry baguette. And then we get to the press room and I see what I think is a refrigerated cabinet full of cheesecake. And I was absolutely delighted. So imagine the horror when we opened this fridge. And what would you call it, Denny? I mean, it was like...
a stale bread flan.
It was a stale bread flan. It was It was, and it just tasted like stale bread and butter. It was so sad.
I mean, you didn't need to taste it to know it was stale. You could smell it immediately.
I still gave it a good go, though, didn't I?
You were that hungry.
I was really hoping that my cheesecake dream might, you know, might come true. So we have been a little bit underpowered today, but I'll tell you who wasn't underpowered today, and that was Justine Hekera. Obviously, we heard her right at the top of the show telling us about, you know, the... I love the kind of subconscious narrative that goes on in her head of just saying no, no, no to Niamh Fisher-Black as she kind of goes off ahead. But a huge performance from Justine Hekera, taking points on four of the five climbs that was there today. And obviously she is kind of a bit of a... She can do a bit of climbing, and she's a bit of a kind of a chancer type ride, one of those opportunist type riders that we love to watch, but yeah, not your usual polka dot jersey.
No, it's great to see her in polka dots, and she's a fully deserving wearer of it after her efforts today and throughout the tour. I think it will be a challenge, won't it, in the next couple of stages, because we've got a lot of points on offer. So whether she can hold on to it, I guess, is another matter, and I guess it'll partly be in the hands of how the GC race goes.
Well, should we hear from her? Because obviously we actually heard from her right at the top of the week when we were getting all the riders to give their predictions of the one thing that's going to happen this week. And she said suffering. So I kind of picked her up on that and wondered who was suffering more today, her, or was she making the other riders suffer more?
I mean, you said in your predictions that you'd make there'd be suffering. Today, were you suffering?
Oh my God, I suffered so hard, especially on the climb where Fisher-Black attacked. And then, I knew I had to take the points there, because when I took the points there, then maybe I had the jersey. So I went really all in on that climb, and it was... Yeah, it was that. It was suffering, suffering, yes. Uh-huh.
But did it feel all worth it now?
Yeah. I didn't know I had the jersey until the last 5K. Jolien told me, yeah, you have the jersey. And I was like, oh no, yeah, I have the jersey. And then, I was so, it feels very good.
Uh-huh. It's a difficult time to get the jersey, though, because it's just more mountains to come.
Yeah, it's more mountains, and I don't think I can survive the long mountains, but for me it's already a huge achievement to have the jersey in the tour one day, and I will see it the next 2 days, but it was the goal with the team to have the jersey one day, and so I have it one day, and I will try to keep it, but I will first enjoy this day.
So Justine Hekera in the polka dot jersey. But it was interesting, wasn't it? Because she was always trying to get to the front of the race, trying to stay on Niamh Fisher-Black's wheel. We saw Niamh Fisher-Black and Justine Hekera and Grace Brown go away as a three at one point, and Justine Hekera constantly putting in a huge amount of effort to kind of stay on those wheels. But I mean, my question would be, is what was Niamh Fisher-Black doing right at the front of the race? Because we saw yesterday SD Works obviously got the stage win with Blanca Vass. I would say at the detriment to Demi Vollering and the yellow jersey, which obviously lost because she had a crash, didn't really have the teammate support then yesterday. So it's unusual, I think, on hilly terrain for... Niamh Fisher-Black, their best domestique in the mountains, to be up the road, burning a lot of energy, trying to vie for a stage win, I would have thought.
It does all feed into the narrative that there's disharmony in the SD
Works. You've been reading too much Jeremy Whittle, haven't you?
I have, yeah. He's been stirring up in the Guardian newspaper. But certainly it was an odd tactic. We were looking at the tour tracker before the live pictures came on TV, and we saw that Christine Mardaris was in an early break that didn't make it. Of course, Niamh Fisher-Black was up there, well, right in towards the very end of the race, and it seemed like they were determined to have riders in whatever break went away. And so I did ask Anna van der Breggen about this. She said it was partly about having riders up the road in case any needed to drop back in support of Demi Vollering. And she also said, you know, if it worked out well, then there could be a stage win on the card. So that was the apparent thinking of ST Works Pro Time, or at least the justification that Anna van der Breggen was publicly giving.
For me, that doesn't make any sense, though, does it? Because, I mean, if you're putting someone up the road so that when they drop back, they kind of give you a bit of support, which makes sense as a tactic. I mean, for one, you don't normally put your top mountain domestique there, because they're normally like the gatekeeper, the guardian of the yellow jersey. Or, I mean, not that Demi Vollering is the yellow jersey, we should say, but, you know, effectively, that's what she's looking to be. So you would think that Nee Fisher-Black should be protecting Demi Vollering. And then also, if you do put someone right in the front, they shouldn't really be trying to win, look like they're trying to win the race. You'd think they would just be following the wheels and saving their energy so that if they're needed and called upon, they then have the energy to help the, you know, yellow jersey or the potential yellow jersey.
Yeah, I mean, I was wondering, as we were looking at various SD Works riders trying to get in breakaways, maybe their tactic was to launch a surprise attack, try and get back yellow already, and then have riders up the road that could help Demi Vollering. That didn't materialise. Maybe that was a tactic. Maybe she wasn't feeling up to it on the day. But it does seem odd, especially having Nee Fisher-Black there, as you say, Rose, because she's going to be Demi Vollering's main lieutenant in the mountains. She's the rider in their squad that can climb the best. So to have her use all that energy on a day like today, when they know that the biggest tests are still to come tomorrow and Sunday, felt very strange indeed.
Well, we've spoken a little bit already, haven't we, about Demi Vollering and, you know, how she was faring today. And let us not forget that she was in that crash yesterday. She did obviously have road rash. She was, when she got back on her bike yesterday, kind of clutching her lower back and her bum. Was she clutching her bum? sounds like I've just made that up. But definitely her lower back anyway, in that lower back to bum area. But she had road rash. And so obviously a little bit of a question mark this today was, you know, how is she going to fare? Are there actually further effects from that crash that even she might not be sure of, you know, how she can perform? Obviously she performed perfectly well on the climb. She finished 12th and in that kind of group with all of the GC contenders, or, you know, the big chase group that came across the line here. So I caught up with her when she was in her ice bath, actually outside the bus, which they've upgraded. Last year it was literally a paddling pool full of like ice filled tights tied off and bundled in, and now they've got a sort of much taller, more professional looking paddling pool essentially full of ice water. So she was having a little bit of R&R in the paddling pool. So I decided to disturb that and, you know, put a microphone in her face.
I don't know, but it's also nice to have 2 days off with the media and the doping control and the podium. So actually, it's not too bad.
You're getting more recovery.
Yeah, now I have more time to recover. Normally, I cannot sit in this bed because then I need to go as fast as possible, shower and to the hotel. But now I can do 15-minute spin and... yeah, first take care of myself before all the other things, and that's actually nice. So,
and what's the feeling like? Are you feeling nervous, excited? What's the kind of feeling towards the last two mountain stages?
Yeah, it's always a bit scary. You know, you never know how the legs are exactly, but yeah, I'm just really motivated, and today was also good, so that gives me confidence for the coming days. And also, I need to trust that the long climbs are really my thing, so I hope it's going to be all right.
Well, it was interesting talking to Demi, because one of the things she did say was that, you know, I think sometimes Demi, she says that she'll do an interview and then she tries to make you wish you never asked, because she tries to give you kind of the most sort of slightly uninspired answers, or, you know, gives you a look like you're really bothering her, but she will, you know, answer your questions. And, you know, one of the things she said was that she's feeling very motivated, and her team, and then she was very quick to clarify that her team was also very motivated for the yellow jersey, with not an ounce of sort of joy in her voice at all, but that, you know, that they were, she wanted to be very clear that her team were on board the gaining the yellow jersey because of the flack that they've received from having sort of left her out on the road for quite a while yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why she was quick to say that. And Danny Stamm did say before the Tour de France fam that, of course, they were all about the yellow jersey. But, of course, the evidence so far suggests they're not just all about the yellow jersey. They're also about stage wins and potentially green and other things as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's we'll see on the road tomorrow, won't we, whether or not the team is fully behind her. And whether the team has the capability of being fully behind her, whether or not they want to or not, of course, is the big question, as we've just discussed with Niamh Fisher-Black being the main candidate. But I did we should talk about tomorrow, shouldn't we, and the upcoming mountains, of course, because that's where the big GC gains will be made, or at least that's what ST Works Pro Time will be hoping, or at least Amy Vollering will be hoping, depending on whether her team are behind her or not. So I did catch up with Anna van der Breggen, and I started asking her about how confident she felt that Damie could make up the time that she's lost on GC.
Yeah, I mean, how confident are you that Damie has what it takes now to get that time back? I mean, there's obviously a lot of mountains left, a lot of climbing left.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. There are a lot of climbing left, and if the legs are still good, and if she can recover, and that's, I think, the most important, then she knows she is good. I mean, look at the season. She is so strong already the whole season, so pretty confident. It depends on how she is recovering, but like today, the signs were good and she's feeling good. So, and then we just go full for it and see how much different there can be. You know, you never know in front. Sometimes also with Kasia, sometimes she can follow quite long. Sometimes she has some off days, we saw in the past as well. And then you talk about minutes on these climbs. It's always until the stage is happening and when you attack, how your legs are. So that will be excited for sure now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of climbing tomorrow, but the climbs aren't super steep compared to the final day. Do you still expect big time gaps tomorrow?
Difficult to say, but yeah, I think after also today was not really an easy stage. So if you see how fast the bunch now also is actually splitting, I expect gaps. Not sure if it's already in the general classification, but I think the fight is also today with the winner of the stage. You can see the fight is pretty big on, and Puk Pietersen is really into the fight. So that I think that's really coloring the race and it's making it really nice. So hopefully a lot of girls are just happy to go for it and to try to make also the difference already tomorrow.
Well, a little bit of shade thrown by Anna van der Breggen there, suggesting that Kasia, you know, isn't always on her A game. I mean, as far as we can see this race, it does seem that Kasia is indeed on her A game, for sure. But it's interesting, isn't it, going into the mountains, because it's almost like the two stages coming up are almost totally different to everything that we've seen before.
Yeah, and this is a kind of, familiar format now for the Tour, isn't it, where almost what's happened before is kind of irrelevant in the big GC contest. So we saw massive time differences on the Tourmalet last year, and a lot of riders lost a lot of time. And although the GC race remained fairly close, it was quite decisive for Damie Vollering in the end, despite her and Annemiek van Vleuten kind of not wanting to work with each other for a while, and Niamh Yudoma kind of getting some time on the road. So yeah, we'd expect a bit more of the same in the next two stages. The stage tomorrow is not, although it involves a lot of climbing, the climbs aren't as steep as we've got on stage 8. So I guess that's going to be slightly easier terrain, but it's a mountain stage. It's classified as a mountain stage. And unlike stage 5, where the organisers were calling it a flat stage, I think they've got this one right.
Yes, it makes you nervous. If that was a flat stage, then a mountain stage, what is that? I mean, it could be absolutely anything. But it's interesting Kasia being in yellow because it's a bit of an unusual position for her, really. We kind of touched upon it yesterday, but she is the kind of a classic kind of underdog in the way she rides. You know, she's the kind of person that wants to stretch the person that's the favourite. It's not really that she's sort of ever a defensive rider, and it's going to be very hard to have that defence against the likes of following and against actually a huge amount of riders that are still in the GC race that are going to be looking to want to preserve their position or see how far they can go.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I spoke to Adam Sabo again. Well, I didn't speak to him again, but we're going to hear from him again.
You couldn't stop bothering him, could you, Denny?
Yeah. I spoke to him all day. But no, also when I spoke to him, I asked him about how the Canyon Tram team and how Cassie Unibedoma will manage things tomorrow, especially given the fact that they've lost Elise Chabet and they don't seem to be at the strength we thought they might be. You were tipping them as the strongest team, weren't
My
you?
My tips are nobody listened to that Tour de France fam preview episode. Well, no, do listen to it because we have a great little mini feature in there about Alpe d'Huez, which obviously will be key coming up. But the rest of it, all of my tips have just been atrocious in hindsight. So I did say Canyon Tram were the strongest team, and on paper they should be, but they're kind of missing their top form, aren't they?
Yeah. Anyway, should we hear what Adam Sabo had to say about what will happen or what he thinks will happen tomorrow?
So Kasia is in a really good form at the moment, and especially tomorrow, and the day after tomorrow, it will come down to I would say individual strengths. It's still good though that we have Neve. It's a really valuable asset for us for the climbs, and no downhill or flat is coming up as a finishing from now on, which is even better for our strengths.
It's interesting there what Adam Sabo suggested there, you know, that the team wouldn't necessarily have the kind of the strong team card that we expected, and it would kind of come down to individual solo efforts, because it does put everyone a little bit on a par, because we were kind of coming into saying SD Works didn't have a particularly strong team and they only had Neve Fisher-Black, and then we've got a situation where Kasia Unibedoma kind of, if what Adam says is right, kind of only has sort of Neve Bradbury to protect her in the mountains. So it could make for quite a lot of exciting racing, or it could be incredibly cagey. We don't know. I'm putting both out there now because I've done such a bad job on doing the predictions. I'm gonna have to put all opinions out there now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it will ultimately come down to individual strength, won't it? I mean, there aren't many teams with riders that have that have several riders up there on GC. Fenix de Koenig are probably best placed because they have put Pieterse and Paulina Rooijakkers in the top 10, but for the rest of the teams and what we know about kind of the individual strengths of riders, when we get to the really big climbs, I think it will be down to the individual strength of those riders. I can't imagine that any team now has the firepower to kind of form a big train or even to try and ambush other riders. Only Fenix de Koenig could potentially do that, and Paulina Rooijakkers tried that a little bit today, didn't she? She did try to get away on that final climb, but couldn't escape. So, yeah, it will be... I'm really looking forward to seeing how it plays out.
Yeah, we're going to find out. It's interesting you mentioned Fenix de Koenig. They obviously, when I spoke to Michelle Cornelis a few days ago, he was saying that having two riders on GC in the top 10 was actually ambition of the team, which is a slightly strange ambition because you think you just want one of them to work for the other and one of them be very high up and, you know, one of them get top five instead of two in the top 10. But, you know, we have been speaking all week that we don't know about Puk Pieterse's ability in the mountains. So why don't we hear from Puk herself and then hear from her DS, Michelle Cornelis, who you caught up with this morning, Denny.
I just wanted to ask a little bit about your recon in the mountains when you went to Alpe d'Huez and La Plagne. What did you learn about how you might be in the mountains when they come?
That is quite tough, riding for such a long time at a high pace. So yeah, we'll have to see how it turns out. Excited, but also a bit nervous, of course, for the upcoming days.
Have you ever raced in the mountains? Have you ever even ridden those mountains before the recon?
Yeah, Alpe d'Huez, of course. It's the Dutch mountain, so I think a lot of Dutchies have ridden the Alpe d'Huez, even if they're not cyclists. The other hills, not really, but yeah, I'm a lot in the mountains for the mountain bike, so I'm used to climbing.
And how do you think will you change your approach to those particular stages when it comes to the mountains? I mean, how do you think you'll go into those particular stages?
I'll just see what the rest is doing probably and go with that and then follow a bit my gut instinct.
For us, it's also a mystery how she's going to race in the weekend. because like I said, with mountain biking and cyclocross, the climbs are always 4 or 5 minutes maximum. So for us it's also a question mark, but it's Puk Pietersen, and Puk Pietersen is special, so yeah, she's free to surprise us.
And I understand she went on, she's reconned the climbs. Can you tell me a bit about that, kind of the preparation she had?
Yeah, but a recon is always different, and then she was thinking, she said it was a long climb, Alpe d'Huez, and it was also good after the Olympics. She came directly to our we were in La Plagne for a training camp, and she directly joined us there, and then she did a few long climbs, but never with against Vollering or... The testers were not bad, but we must see how it is in the race, and it's especially after a six-day race. Puk is always a cyclocross on Saturday, Sunday, and then the whole week nothing, and mountain biking is also 2 days and then nothing. And we must also see how she reacts on 6 day or 8 days racing.
Yeah. Is this the first time she'll have climbed those climbs, or really raced them?
Yeah. This is the first time she's going to do the long climbs like Alpe d'Huez and Klondel. So for us, a surprise, and also for her. But we let her free. If she's dropped, she's dropped. And if it's going good, then it's also good for us. It's also no pressure for her, because we have also Pauline Royakkers, who was fourth in the Giro. And she's also still in a good position in the GC. So she can do everything without pressure.
Yeah. So both those riders will remain protected riders for the time being?
Yeah. But like I said, we count on Paulina, and Puk can surprise us. It's also good for her mind that she don't feel the pressure of the team on her.
Well, Michel Cornelis is kind of... marketed this stage tomorrow perfectly, hasn't he? Because it just sounds like there might be a lot of chaos. To be honest, it's not the kind of rigid DS plan that we would perhaps, you know, come to expect.
No, I mean, even as you probably heard at the end of Anna van der Breggen's interview, she sounded excited about Puk Pietersen and her emergence, and the fact that she is an unknown. And although we probably didn't learn a lot from Puk and Michelle about how she actually will fare, she's clearly really motivated, she's extremely talented, and it was really, really quite exciting to hear that she's going to have a free role in the mountains. They're not going to, I guess the safe bet would be just to put all your eggs into Paulina Royakkers, because she's a more proven...
poor Paulina, that doesn't sound very comfortable.
I need to stop using all the eggs analogies in these podcasts, but yeah, it's kind of refreshing to hear that she'll have a free role, and she'll have that opportunity to see how far she can go, because I guess in another team that she might not get that role, and I think it just adds that extra excitement to the race.
Well, it does sound absolutely thrilling. I think, Denny, you know, we should leave it there, really, because we are in France, and as lovely as it is, the chance of us getting served any food after sort of 8 p.m. becomes very, very difficult. I mean, even the place that we were sitting yesterday with the French crooner, who, on listening back, I could see everyone, it just sounded like a figment of my imagination. Such is the quality of the microphones that we're using here. You couldn't even hear him. It was a shame, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, I wonder if listeners will hear the blaring pop music behind us today.
But... it's not as good as it. Like when he started doing the Tom Jones medley, I actually tried to get out to get a video of him, but he swept through the songs too quickly, and he was finished.
You were disappointed, just because you were slightly annoyed about the fact that he was playing so loudly during recording, not knowing, of course, that the listeners wouldn't be disturbed by his beautiful crooning. But then when we put down the mics, you were fully keen to get up and
enjoy
the spectacle. But he stopped, didn't he? Not long after. Anyway,
I think he must have done it. You know, he resented. He obviously overheard me and resented me mocking his croon. Not mocking his crooning, but, you know, mentioning his crooning at all. But yeah, I mean, we were in the place that we were in yesterday. It only opened at 7. We were there at 7, weren't we? And then the waiter was like, oh, you have to order because the kitchen shuts at 8. And so then it didn't give you much of a window. But so we better run off now. It's also sitting in this lovely square. People seem to have some lovely street food and... working up an appetite, haven't
Definitely.
We? We worked up an appetite. Anyway, thank you very
Especially
much.
Especially after that stale bread flan.
Oh, don't mention it. Let's try and find some cheesecake, Denny. I don't even know if that's a thing here, but it better be. It better be. Right, Denny, let's go and find some cheesecake. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you, Rose.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.